Senator. Speech, sir.
Amen.
Four words.
We stand at the doorstep of a new millennium. Our obligation is to
listen to this. I put a little time in on this.
And at the same time, restore its creative power. To reinvigorate our society and bring about a rebirth of democracy. Any questions?
Nice.
Good evening.
Yes. Less is more.
When the riots and civil unrest went down about 4 years ago, you promised us federal funding to rebuild our community. What happened?
Well, what happened was that we all knew that was going to be big news for a while, so we all came down here, Bush, Clinton, Wilson, all of us. We got our pictures taken, told you what you wanted to hear, and we pretty much forgot about it.
Did he just say what I think he said?
Let's see where he's going with this.
Down here. We can't get health insurance, fire insurance, life insurance. Why haven't you come out for Senate Bill 2720?
Well, because you haven't really contributed any money to my campaign, have you? You got any idea how much these insurance companies come up with? They pretty much depend on me to get a bill like that and bottle it up in my committee during an election. And in that way, we can kill it when you're not looking.
Fred, when you say buy the book, what book would that be?
Are you saying the Democratic Party don't care about the African-American community?
Isn't that obvious? Hey, you got half of your kids out of work and the other half are in jail. Do you see any Democrat doing anything about it? Certainly not me. So what are you going to do, vote Republican? Come on. You're not going to vote Republican. Let's call a spade a spade. I mean, come on, you can have a billion-man march. If you don't put down that malt liquor and chicken wings and get behind somebody other than a running back who stabs his wife, you're never going to get rid of somebody like me.
And welcome to the 6 p.m. Friday news. And for those of you, those sinfowls out there in the audience, I guess you noticed what movie that is in the background. I think it's one of the best movies that ever came out the year it did. That's Bullworth with my man. Who's the lead actor in that? But he's really, really good. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that's Bullworth. And don't you just love a politician that tells the truth? And again, this is killradio.org, the 6 p.m. news. I'm going to try and play some more of that before the news hour is off. I'm sorry. Oh, my God. I can't believe I forgot his name. Warren Beatty. That's who the actor is. Warren Beatty, who played J. Billington Bullworth, the U.S. Senator who tells the truth. And don't you love it? And again, this is Kill Radio News. And right now, let's. I have a lot planned for you today because I haven't been in here in a while. So I'm going to read a great story from the LA Times about this black guy who's mentally retarded. They're trying to kill him in Virginia. I'm going to play a little music. And I got some great stuff off the that I stole from the radio, from the left wing radio about how Bush is. Screwing all these black people down in Louisiana. I'll play that later on. But let's go into a little jazz right now, and then I'm going to come back and read this article on this brother who they're trying to execute over in Virginia. And in case you don't know, I think yesterday in Texas, they executed a woman. They executed a woman, a black woman. But that's par the course for George Bush's state. Personally, I'm against capital punishment, but, you know, because I think we do not progress as a society, you know, by doing that. But in George Bush's world, I guess they think you do. So let's go back. Let's go back and do a little more Bullworth, and then I'm going to play some jazz. And again, this is Cure Radio, 6 p.m. news.
Your colleagues from C-SPAN head on over to headquarters. Okay, that is a good idea. Great. Let's do that. Come on, Gare. Let's go. And we'll see you in Beverly Hills. That is a good idea.
Gary, this is going to be much better for you. You're going to get a behind-the-scenes look at how a California campaign actually operates.
You eat on the plane, Senator?
Nope. How long since you ate?
Wednesday. Pull in here, will you?
I'm starving. Let's get some chicken wings.
Frankly, this is getting a little uncomfortable for me. A third of the guests have left already. A third of the guests are drunk. When do you think he'll be here?
I think he'll be here any second.
You do?
He's really had such a day.
My guess is that the senator is helping the State Department work out.
Okay, I'm back. See, I'm back again with Mr. Stanley Clarke in the background. Stanley Clarke has a new movie out. I heard he's doing the music for this new film out, directed by Spike Lee's younger brother. So again, this is Stanley Clarke in the background. Philadelphia's own Stanley Clarke. And this is 6 p.m. News. I'm Hassan. And I'm going to read this article from I'm going to read this article from the LA Times. From the LA Times, what's the date? Saturday, August 6th, 2005. And it's written by, who wrote this? It just says, from Associated Press, and it's called Death for a Man in Retardation Case. Gerald Atkins' lawyers won a Supreme Court ban on execution of the mentally incompetent, but a Virginia jury rules he is competent. Again, from Associated Press, Yorktown, Virginia, a death row inmate whose case led the Supreme Court to ban executions of the mentally retarded was found mentally competent by a Virginia jury Friday. A judge scheduled his execution for December. Gerald Atkins, 27, flashed a peace sign to his family and blew a kiss as he was led from the courtroom after the verdict. 3 years ago, Atkins' case led to the landmark U.S. Supreme Court ruling that executing the mentally retarded was unconstitutional. The court left it up to the states to determine whether inmates were retarded. The Virginia jury deliberated for 13 hours over 2 days before determining Atkins was not retarded. If the jury had deemed Atkins retarded, he would have been sentenced to life in prison for the robbery and slaying of an Air Force enlisted man over beer money. York County Prosecutor Elaine Addison said she agreed with the Supreme Court's ban on executing the mentally retarded, but she said Atkins was the wrong case. Quote unquote, "We never disagreed that he was probably a slow learner," Addison said. "That's not the same as being mentally retarded," quote unquote. Atkins' lawyers maintained they had established their client's mental retardation. "People in this community rejected that," attorney Richard Burr said. "We don't know why," quote unquote. During a court proceeding that the judge said was unique in judicial history, defense lawyers portrayed Atkins' mental ability as so limited he was cut from the football team because he couldn't understand the plays. The prosecution blamed his poor performance in school on the use of drugs and alcohol and said that the claim of mental retardation was a ploy to avoid execution. Each side called expert witnesses who disagreed on whether Atkins fell into the category of mentally retarded. An IQ of 70 or less by the age of 18 is required to be considered mentally retarded in Virginia. The state's definition also takes into account social skills and the ability to care for oneself. Atkins had scores of 59, 67, 74, and 76 on IQ tests, but they were given when he was older than 18. Atkins was 18 when he and William Jones killed Airman First Class Eric Nesbitt, 21. Nesbitt was abducted outside a convenience store, forced to withdraw money from an automated teller machine, and driven to a desolate road where he was shot 8 times. Prosecutors said Atkins was the trigger man. A plea agreement was reached with Jones, who testified against Atkins and received a life sentence. Atkins' case has been closely watched by civil rights activists, in part because the jury did not include any blacks, and Atkins is black. The jury declined to comment after the verdict was read. And again, that's from the Los Angeles Times, Saturday, August 6, 2005. That was in Section A. And I don't know, maybe because I'm African American, I'm a little partial to this, but you know, I mean, what, 90% of death row is black people. Actually, a couple years ago, some young progressive federal judges formed some committees to see why that was. Like, we don't know, but I guess to professionally try and form some sort of opinion. I would like to hear what the outcome of that was, but you know, it's interesting. It just happened in Virginia. And that's Robert E. Lee's home state. It's only, what, one state below the Mason-Dixon line, you figure. And I'm not trying to say anything when I say this, but you figure if he had committed that murder maybe one state north of Virginia, he wouldn't be on death row. It's the South. It's George Bush country. Again, like I said, they executed a woman yesterday in Texas, a black woman. I think someone told me that was the first time a black woman's been executed by the state in that state since the Civil War. But let's go back into a little music. And I'm going to keep you guys posted on this case in Virginia, too, to see what's up with it. Because, like I said, it set a precedent for it's setting a precedent for other cases on executing the mentally ill, you know. But let's go back into a little jazz. I think that's Stanley Clark is still in the background playing. Let me see if I can hear him. And again, I'm Hassan. This is the 6 p.m. Friday news. And I love Kill Radio. Let me see if I can bring up Stanley Clark. Okay, again, this is Hassan again. Ooh, I didn't mean to jump on the mic and holler like that. Sorry for your ears, guys. Because I love all my listeners. Hassan again. What we're going to do, we're going to go in, like I promised. I know you guys are tired of hearing about Hurricane Katrina, but I stole some great stuff off of the Left Wing Radio. I wanted to play for you guys. And listen to, it's some interesting things, some tidbits on how Laura Bush shows you how disconnected these people are. Laura Bush doesn't even know what the name of the hurricane is. This one politician says gay people are the cause for the hurricane. FEMA saying you can't take pictures of the dead body. But let's start out this. Let's start this off with listen to this rap song, you guys, that FEMA produced. It's actually embarrassing to any rapper, you know. Let's go into that. And again, this is the Kill Radio 6 p.m. news. I'm Hassan. Let's see.
Disaster. It can happen anywhere, but we got a few tips so you can be prepared for floods, tornadoes, or even a quake. You gotta be ready so your heart don't break. Disaster prep is your responsibility, and mitigation is important to our agency. People helping people is what we do, and FEMA is there to help see you through. When disaster strikes, we are at our best, but we're ready all the time because disasters don't rest.
All right. Your tax dollars at work. They actually, check me out, FEMAforKids.gov. They have the word mitigate in their rap song. That is psychotic. That is absolutely psychotic that somebody is spending money on a website like that and putting crap like that up with your tax dollars. And this is the best they can do. It really is. It's the best they can do. So believe them when they show you that the best they can do is cause people to call FEMA by telling them, promising them, go to the convention center, there'll be food and water. There's no food and water. Go to the Astrodome, the Superdome, there'll be food and water. There's no food and water. Then they say, okay, call FEMA. They call FEMA. Your number, we're disconnecting you. Can't be bothered with you. Go to the FEMA website. They go to the FEMA website and you get the stupid rap song with the word mitigate in it. Criminally corrupt. Negligent. They're laughing at you. They're laughing at you. Laura Bush today did not know the name of the hurricane. It's cut 11. She did not know the name of... I'm just going to leave you with this. Now, I want the people who are protesting the war in Iraq and the people who want to shame this president into resigning and his whole freaking cabinet, every last one of them, I want you to join forces because they've lied and they won't stop. But I'm going to leave you with this. This is the First Lady of the United States of America talking about Hurricane Katrina.
In almost every state, children who've been displaced because of Hurricane Katrina. I want to thank the people here, and I also want to encourage anybody who is affected by Hurricane Katrina to make sure their children are in school, that they're safe in school, and that they have all the support that they need to weather this time that's going to be difficult for them.
Hurricane Katrina, she thinks it's a Whoopi Goldberg character.
Wow.
Good night.
This is the Ready Room.
So thank God for, you know, the out-of-work electricians. Thank God for the Canadian rescue teams. Thank Christ for the charity that Americans are showing each other. And actually, while we're on the subject, thank God for the Mexican Army also providing some much-needed help. We're going to be talking Mexico's Army, Rick Perry's big donations idea, how the Nazis fit into all of this, and the rest of this disaster theater of the totally nutball absurd. When we return on the Majority Report, it's 15 hours. Government's response in that parish. The fact that we've got the Mexican Navy and Mexican military convoys providing supplies in the region. The fact that we've got Pat Robertson getting his Operation Blessing organization on the list of FEMA approved charities for American Americans to donate to. Only two charities listed on the FEMA list of approved charities were not faith-based charities. We've got Rick Perry asking for donations to either the Red Cross, the Salvation Army, or his personal foundation that basically promotes his legacy and his reelection in Texas. We've got the white supremacists putting up scam Katrina relief websites to try to lure Americans into accidentally donating basically to supporters of the National Alliance and JewWatch.com. It just gets stranger and stranger. We did have one entirely predictable thing happen, and that was that the Concerned Women for America decided that they had figured out finally why Hurricane Katrina hit the Gulf Coast.
At a time when the city of New Orleans is facing decay and depravity through looting and horrible filth through floodwaters, there is a group that is seeking to sink that city and the state of Louisiana even lower.
They're talking
Martha,
about me.
This is a disturbing event. It's been held for 34 years in New Orleans, and only in recent years has it gotten very big. They were expecting 125,000 people, and what it is a homosexual street festival.
Woo!
And the most alarming thing is that the mayor of New Orleans welcomed this festival. It's no wonder. Some people are saying that God had a hand in the destruction of New Orleans and did it to send us all a message that he's tired of sin being celebrated so openly.
Wow. So I said that all that weird stuff happened, all that weird stuff I talked about in the first hour of the show today. This is the totally normal stuff. This is the stuff that you can absolutely expect. Concerned Women for America, no wonder people are saying that God swamped the Gulf Coast because of gay people. And while all this is happening, while this is unfolding, absurd, not absurd, political and not political, the question remains, how much are we going to actually be allowed to know about what's really happening in the Gulf Coast? We've been starting to hear reports about the press being locked out of parts of the region where the recovery efforts are underway. The press being excluded from some of these areas. We've all heard about the FEMA order that corpses can't be photographed. How much of a press blackout is there in the Gulf Coast region? One of the guys who has been covering this and providing information for us on this subject in a way that the mainstream media, I think, hasn't yet been able to get to in as good a way is Bob Brigham. And Bob Brigham usually blogs at swingstateproject.com. He's currently on the ground in the Gulf Coast. He's been blogging at rebuildthesouth.com, and he joins us now by phone. Bob, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. Good to have you on evening hour.
Yeah, good. I'm in Janine's chair. It's a little. I'm a little nervous. Bob, are you in New Orleans right now?
I'm not. We left New Orleans this afternoon, and I'm back in Baton Rouge tonight.
Okay. And what's the scene in Baton Rouge?
Well, the town's tripled in size, and so it's a lot of traffic. But the town is really rallying to help out their neighbors from New Orleans. I was blown away at the number of students from Louisiana State University who have been volunteering at the emergency triage center there on campus. It's pretty much being run by students.
Wow.
Stepping up and taking a very large role, and it's really great to see there.
And the students must just be back right now, given the timing. So that must, they must have come back to school, and this is what they've done since they came back.
Yeah, they've been ditching class to help out, and that's, I think, a pretty noble way to ditch class.
Now, as far as I understand, Baton Rouge didn't itself face much damage from the storm. It was pretty much spared physically from the storm. Is that right?
Yeah, there was tree damage, but the city has done a fabulous job at getting back on its feet. The roads are clear. Everything's functional. The local telephone system is still somewhat strained by the number of people. The town's literally tripled in size.
Wow.
But people, you know, are taking in, you know, as many people as they can into their homes and helping people get through the crisis.
Where else have you traveled since you've been down there?
We did the entire Gulf Coast, Gulfport, which looked like Fallujah, Biloxi. We've now done 2 days inside New Orleans, and a lot of small towns that you don't hear about too much in the mainstream media that have you know, really struggled to step up and take care of themselves because the, you know, FEMA hasn't taken care of them.
You blogged yesterday, Bob, that in Jefferson Parish, Jefferson Parish outside of New Orleans, at a National Guard checkpoint, that they were under orders to turn away all of the media, and they were turning TV trucks around. What was that like? What was that scene like? And did they actually tell you no media are allowed in Jefferson Parish?
Yeah, it was actually Jefferson City, I learned later on.
Okay.
We finally managed to find a store that had maps. And it was really startling to see. I do have credentials with the Louisiana Broadcasters Association, and that, you know, are backed up by the state police. You know, but I'm a blogger, so that's one thing. But seeing, you know, news crews have to turn around their trucks at an arm.
Again, you guys, this is the Cure Radio 6 p.m. News, and in the background is just some left-wing radio that I stole to play on my show. And what I want to do, it's almost my time to get out of here in about 15 to 20 minutes. Xenophone should be coming in, but I want to, because I haven't been here in a couple of weeks, I've been meaning to read this article. This is another article from the Los Angeles Times. What's the date? Sunday, August 7th, 2005. A great little short, real short article on Subcommando Marcus, the Zapatista leader. Again, this is from the Los Angeles Times, Section A, Sunday, August 7th, 2005. from Reuters, there's no writer on this, it just says from Reuters, Zapatista leader emerges to scorn Mexican candidates. Marcos says he won't back any, Marcos says he won't back any of the shameless scoundrels running for president. From Reuters, San Rafael, Mexico, masked rebel leader Subcommando Marcus emerged from the jungle for the first time in 4 years Saturday to castigate Mexico's presidential candidates as shameless scoundrels, quote-unquote, and said he would back none in next year's election. The Zapatista rebel leader's appearance at a meeting of activists in southern Mexico's Chiapas state seemed to be aimed at reclaiming a political role for the rebels before the election next July. They'll pay for everything they have done to us. They are a bunch of shameless scoundrels, quote-unquote, Marcos said from behind the black ski mask he has worn in public since the Zapatistas' first birth from the jungles in 1994. The decomposition of the political class is so great that we can do nothing, quote-unquote, said Marcos, smoking his trademark pipe. He reserved special air for presidential frontrunner Andrés Manuel López Obrador, a member of the center-left Democratic Revolution Party, calling him a false leftist. They say maybe Lopez Obrador, excuse me, sir, if I didn't pronounce your name right. They say maybe Lopez Obrador doesn't steal, but his team has shown its ability and appetite to do so, quote-unquote, Marcos said. In a video widely broadcast last year, one of Lopez Obrador's closest advisors was secretly filmed accepting money and stuffing a briefcase full of cash. Marcos has said the rebels will embark on a cross-country tour aimed at uniting workers, students, and activists around a leftist agenda. The Zapatistas shocked the world when they declared war on the Mexican government and attacked police and army positions on New Year's Day in 1994, demanding rights for indigenous tribes. About 150 people died as the rebels seized towns and clashed with security forces in the first few days. But there has been little fighting since then, and the Zapatistas have turned increasingly to civic action. In 2001, they crisscrossed Mexico in a two-week tour to drum up support for an Indian rights bill. They were received like rock stars, were allowed to address Congress, and drew about 100,000 supporters to Mexico City's main square. Marcos's identity has never been confirmed, but he is widely believed to be a non-Indian Mexican academic and political activist. Again, that was an article from the LA Times, Sunday, August 7th, 2005. It was titled, Zapatista Leader Emerges to Scorn Mexican Candidates. That was from Reuters. And again, this is the Kill Radio 6 p.m. Friday news. what's this? Friday the 16th? What month is this? September? Yeah, Friday the 16th. And let's go back into this left-wing talk that's going on here on this other radio station. Let's see if we can hear some Hurricane Katrina talk.
Wow, what was that noise?
That was God letting us know what time it is.
It sounded like you got on a carousel all of a sudden. That was outstanding.
I'm in a parking lot.
Oh, very good. All right, sorry, the explanation for why they were telling people that.
They would not give an explanation. They said they were following orders. However, safety must not have been the explanation because they were letting people from the area pass by, which created a huge log jam because, you know, the big media trucks were having to turn around in a narrow, you know, street with, you know, floodwaters on both sides. But they would not give a reason.
What do you, you know, one of the things, Bob, that's getting, starting to get a speculative attention up here in the Northeast media and in places like the New York Times is that we still don't have a body count. We still have not even really a projected body count out of Louisiana. We know that the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, ordered 25,000 body bags. The official death toll is still at under 100 in Louisiana. And people are starting to worry, especially now that there's this rule that there can be no pictures of the dead, according to FEMA. People are starting to worry that maybe the death toll is going to be obscured or that people won't be able to report on it. Have you talked to anybody about that? Do you have any sense about that issue?
Well, yeah, we actually got lost in the middle of Louisiana driving back from New Orleans last night and stopped at an oil refinery to ask for directions. And the person there said that there was a morgue across the street and that refrigerator trucks had been coming and going all day and that they were just shocked at the number of refrigerator trucks that had been coming and going. I think the fact that they will not provide a running total says that it is going to be a lot higher than anyone initially imagined.
What if they never release a total? I mean, who can verify these things? Who's doing the counting? That's what I'm worried about. I'm starting to feel kind of conspiratorial about the fact that we don't know how many people have been killed.
Well, I think you should, because FEMA should not enjoy the benefit of the doubt.
If we've learned anything.
By how they have done so far in this situation.
Absolutely.
FEMA has lost any benefit of the doubt. And now more than ever, transparency is necessary because of the massive blunders last week. And, you know, I live in San Francisco. You know, the 2001 FEMA report, you know, said the three worst catastrophes would be another 9/11, you know, the Louisiana, exactly what happened in the San Francisco earthquake. And we need to get these things fixed because we know they happened. And the complete incompetence that has come from the Bush administration during this disaster, when, you know, I think the disaster was, you know, the flooding, not the hurricane.
Yeah.
It's just been overwhelming. You know, driving through New Orleans, I mean, there was damage from the hurricane, but, you know, I mean, there's no reason why everybody shouldn't be back in New Orleans right now with the power on. The true catastrophe was the flooding. And
it didn't have to happen.
Accountability for that.
Bob Brigham, thank you so much for calling in. It's been really good to have you on. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Thank you.
Nice to meet you. Bob Brigham usually blogs at swingstateproject.com. He's currently on the ground, as you heard, in Baton Rouge. He's been all over the Gulf Coast. His blogging reports are pretty great. It's worth looking up. RebuildTheSouth.com. We're going to post a link to that at MajorityReportRadio.com. I'm Rachel Maddow, filling in for Sam. Bob Brigham, who's in New Orleans, who's in Baton Rouge now, who's been in New Orleans, who's been in Gulfport, who's been around a lot of the devastated region, has talked about seeing TV trucks being turned around and the National Guard having orders to not allow the press into specific areas. We know that FEMA has barred the photographing of corpses in the devastated region and asked media organizations not to take those images or at least not to broadcast them. And people are starting to worry about why the American people is being prevented from knowing what's happening in this devastated region that was ignored by our federal government and suffered because of it. I will say that with all the photo ops and all of the press management and all of the spin and all the media blackout stuff that's going on, there are occasionally these moments where real, I guess real life, real information, real, the real dirt kind of accidentally shines through what they're trying to portray. So you get these photo ops with Bush and the firefighters, and then we learn that the firefighters aren't actually down there fighting fires. They were only sent there to be in the photo op with Bush. And we had Dick Cheney today in Gulfport, Mississippi. He and his wife, Lynn, toured around Gulfport, Mississippi, and then he gave a speech. He said, I think the progress we're making is significant. I think the performance in general, at least in terms of the information I've received from locals, emphasis on locals, is very impressive. And then, inconveniently enough, one of those locals showed up at his photo op.
So those kinds of issues need to get resolved, and those issues are being worked by FEMA as well as by state officials. So there are problems like that that need to be sorted out. You've got, as I was talking to the mayor, in those areas, one of the things you got to...
You've
got to figure out what to do with all of the debris.
Are you getting a lot of that, Mr. Vice President?
And it's the first time I've heard it.
First time I've heard it. I don't know who that guy is, but you, my friend, are an American hero. The unnamed passerby who told Dick Cheney to go himself, you are a national hero. Because, and the press then issues a follow-up question. You getting a lot of that, Mr. Vice President? Thank you. No, I've never heard that, except when people replay to me my own remarks to Pat Leahy on the floor of the Senate. You know, the puncturing of what they're trying to do in terms of managing this stuff gives me a little bit of hope. And I feel like they can try to block out the press, and they can turn around the TV trucks, and they can ban people from photographing the dead. Maybe they won't even count the dead. Maybe they'll never let us know how many Americans died because of their negligence. But this happened on our soil, among our people, and the American people cannot be stopped from talking to each other. Are you in the Gulf Coast? Have you evacuated from the Gulf Coast? Are you in Texas? Are you in Oklahoma? Are you in any of the neighboring states that have received an influx of people who have survived this? Call me, 866-303-2270. The way that we're going to get real information out of what's happened in the response to Hurricane Katrina is to talk to each other. Because we can't count on the press being able to give us all the information, even though the press, in some cases, did a good job last week by having people there well before the federal government. We're going to need to talk to each other because they're going to make us believe. They're going to try to make us believe that what happened didn't really happen, and what we saw wasn't really what we saw. And Americans need this. We need to start talking to each other, whether we're part of the relief effort. Have you participated in any of the relief effort? Have you done anything to help out? Have you been down there as a member of the press, as a blogger, as somebody traveling? Have you been evacuated? What have you been seeing? Americans, we need to talk to each other about this stuff and get on our own record about this before they start whitewashing what actually happened. 866-303-2270. This is the Majority Report. The press freedom in the Gulf Coast is being restricted. We know that FEMA is trying to get the media to not cover the corpses, to not photograph people who've died in the devastation. And we know that there have been reports of journalists being barred from specific areas during the relief and rescue effort, and not particularly for their own safety, just because the craft of journalism is not welcome there. If the lockdown on the truth continues and gets worse in the Gulf Coast, the way we're going to know what actually happens is by Americans talking to each other in the forums that can't be censored, like you calling me, for example, toll-free, 866-303-2270. Let's talk to Mike in Dallas, who's on line one. Colin, Mike, who says several thousand evacuees are in Dallas. Is that true?
That's true. Yeah. I want to say hello, hon.
Hi, how are you?
So good to talk to you. We finally got Air America down here a few months ago, and I've been listening ever since it started. I know you have limited time, and I'll try to make this.
It's okay. I'll tell you, we're really, really happy to be in Dallas, so I'm glad we're there.
I am so happy. You don't know how happy I am for you folks to be here. I've told everyone I know, and I've told hundreds of people I don't know. I'm just one of those real talkative gregarious. I'm from East Texas. I'm an East Texas enlightened redneck.
Very good.
And, I want to start. I'll try to make this quick. Yes, we have, at the last I heard, we have something like about 10,000 evacuees here in the city of Dallas. And I tell you, the response that the people here have made has been, I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's all right. I'll stick with you.
It's very heartwarming. I'm not happy living here in Dallas right now, but it warms my heart so much to see the outpouring of the giving that has been so overwhelming. There was a lady that works for the Salvation Army was on the noon news today, and she came on and she made a request that people actually stop dropping off, you know, clothing and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Said that all of their warehouses are absolutely overflowing. They said they're so crammed, so full they can barely get around them.
That's amazing.
To sort things out.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, I do stagehand work, and tomorrow night and Saturday night we're doing they overflowed in Reunion Arena.
Mm.
So they moved them over to the Dallas Convention Center, and right next door there's a theater. And tomorrow night and Saturday night we're doing a charity concert.
Oh, that's amazing. You're going to do it for at the Convention Center or at Reunion, one of those two places?
The theater where it's going to be in is right next door. I mean, you can throw a rock and hit it. It's just like it's 50 yards away from the Convention Center itself.
Wonderful.
And of course, the theater, it only seats about maybe about 1,800 people, but I expect, I'm sure it'll fill up both nights. The people here have responded in such a wonderful way. I hear stories about these kids getting out, you know, with their lemonade stands, and one little girl somewhere made like $1,600.
Wow.
And, I mean, that wasn't here in Dallas, but I mean, it was like, you know, it's the whole country, it's so necessary because, I mean, as we've all seen,
mm-hmm.
Okay, you guys, this is killradio.org, and I see Xenophone is out in the green room, and he'll be coming on the air pretty soon. And let's see, this is the 6 p.m. news, and thanks for sticking with me and listening to all the rants and raves here on Kill Radio. Check me out this Monday, this coming Monday night at midnight. I'll be doing the jazz show, and then I'll be back next Friday for the news. Let's see, we're going to go out, like I said, with what we started with, the film Bullworth. For all you cinephiles. Did I say that word right, Jaime?
Cinephiles,
okay.
Otherwise, cinephile is someone who loves sin.
Because I know Jaime the cinephile. Okay, so anyway, let's go back into Bullworth. I think one of the best films that came out that year. And thanks for listening, you guys. And I love all my listeners.
Why this new manner of dress and speech? Your ethnic manner of speech, your clothes? The use of obscenity.
Obscenity?
But he, my third cousin, okay, he was, it's true, on the playground, and they're out there trying to get above the rim. Oh, it's great. Make it better. I mean, I'm not going to regret that for you. Of course not going to regret that.
The rich is getting richer and richer and richer while the middle class is getting more poor. Just making billions and billions and billions and billions and billions and billions of bucks. Well, my friend, if you weren't already rich at the start, that situation sucks, because the richest motherfucker in five of us is getting 98% of it. And every other motherfucker in the world is left to wonder where the fuck we went with it. Obscenity? I'm a senator. I gotta raise $10,000 a day every day I'm in Washington. I ain't getting it in South Central. I'm getting it in Beverly Hills. So I'm voting in the Senate the way they want me to, and I'm sending them my bills. But we got babies in South Central dying as young as they do in Peru. We got public schools that are nightmares. We got a Congress that ain't got a clue. We got kids with submachine guns. We got militias throwing bombs. We got Bill just getting all weepy. We got Newt blaming teenage moms. We got factories closing down. Where the hell did all the good jobs go? Well, I'll tell you where they went. My contributors make more profits making hiring kids in Mexico. Oh, a brother can work in fast food if he can't invent computer games. But what we used to call America, that's going down the drains. How's a young man going to meet his financial responsibilities working at motherfucking Burger King? He ain't! And please, don't even start with that school shit. There ain't no education going on up in that motherfucker. Obscenity? We got a million brothers in prison. I mean, the walls are really rocking, but you could bet your ass they'd all be out if they could pay for Johnny Cochran. The Constitution's supposed to give them an equal chance. Well, that ain't going to happen for sure. Ain't it time to take a little from the rich motherfucker and just give a little to the poor? I mean, there's boys over there on the monitor. They want a government smaller and weak. But they'd be speaking for the richest 20% when they pretending they defending the meek. Ah, shit, fuck, cocksucker. That's the real obscenity black folks living with every day, is trying to believe a motherfucking word Democrats and Republicans say. Obscenity? I'm J. Billington Bullworth, and I've come to say the Democratic Party's got them shit to pay. It's gonna pay it in the ghetto. It's gonna pay it in the...
Senator, are you saying that the Democratic Party doesn't care about the African-American
Isn't
community?
That obvious? Look, a lot of people think there are no black leaders today because they all got killed, but I happen to think it's because of the decimation of the manufacturing base in the urban centers. Don't you think so? What do you think my age is?
He's had his time. Bless you.
You know, the guy in the booth who's talking to you on a tiny little earphone? He's afraid the guys at network gonna tell him he's through if he lets the guy keep talking like I'm talking to you. Because the corporation's got the networks, and they get to say who gets to talk about the country and who's crazy today. I would cut to a commercial if you still want this job, because you may not be back tomorrow with this corporate mob. Cut to a commercial.
Okay, flush him.
Cut the commercial. Cut the commercial. Cut the commercial.